All right, welcome to Noise Avocation Podcast. I'm Jeremy, that's Ryan, and we're here with Sarah. You gotta say your name for me, your whole name, so I don't mess it up.
Sarah Koretsky Rossington.
Thank you, the hardcore therapist.
It's me.
So thank you for agreeing to come on the show with us and listen to our questions. And
yeah, for sure.
How's it going today?
Good. It's good. Like, I want to thank you both. I'm super grateful to do this. You know, it's always good to have fellow Michigan peeps, you know, doing something cool and talking music. So I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we watched your live stream on TNF podcast, and I remember us getting shouted out a couple times on there.
Yeah, that was rad. Thank you for doing that too.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I got to type in live and talk shit. It was a good time.
Yeah, originally, like, there was a point in the interview where he stopped somebody from saying something or whatever. Yeah. I thought it was you.
No, really? No, it wasn't me.
I got super nervous. Like, I did something wrong, and I'm like...
Yeah, because...
No, it was weird. I was like, it's fucking like some Unabomber shit, or like...
Do you know what it was?
Not exactly. I mean, I think something happened with someone was like talking shit about the podcast. I'm always like, oh my God, what's someone saying about me? That's like my first go-to is like, did I do something? Did I screw up? Are they like telling me I'm an idiot? Like, you know, it's a sad existence that I still work on that. But definitely that was my first thought, but it wasn't.
I was like looking for the chat, but I think it was on StreamYard or something, and I was watching it on YouTube, so I didn't see what was said, but I thought it was like Jeremy fucking around or something, because I was like maybe ten minutes before I tuned in. Well, I just thought maybe he made some smart ass comment, joking around. For sure. So I was like, oh shit, does he not know it's Jeremy? But I was just curious.
No, because I think I shouted you out, didn't I?
Yeah, so yeah, it was like something a about that. About us talking to him about like hardcore and metal dudes looking tough and being super cool, but then like people in suits and ties being like complete assholes.
It was the cosplay thing. It was hippies.
Hippies are fucking
assholes cosplaying nice people, and hardcore people are the opposite. I remember.
So that was pretty funny. You're like, I think Jeremy or Ryan said it or whatever, and we're like, yeah. But anyway.
Yeah, now I remember.
That's awesome.
So, like, I guess, like, full disclosure, we've known each other for a little while now.
Like 6 months?
Yeah. So, it's, just so people know, like, I got... Like, the questions, I guess, I'm going to be asking are kind of more, like, I know where they're kind of going, I guess, instead of just, like, I don't know, just so people know that we know each other, I guess. But you just met Ryan today, right?
Yeah, this is the first time we've talked.
I met Ryan.
So that's super cool. Like you said, you're down in Michigan.
I am, usually.
Jeremy knows, like, more of your background than I do, so why don't you... Tell us like a little bit about yourself and how you got into doing what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, it's an interesting thing because I think for me, talking about music is probably, you know, the best place to get started with kind of how I end up doing what I'm doing. When I was 13, I had a friend named Chris Riley who made me a mixtape. Maybe I was 12. I was in seventh grade. He made me a mixtape. So Oakland Community College had like a really fantastic radio station, college radio station, and we used to like tape off of the radio station. Like, so we would hear like, you know, like Bitchin' Camaros coming on, and like we would like tape it. And so Chris made me this mix tape, and I heard bands that I had never heard before. So I remember hearing like Dead Kennedys, Black Flag, a lot of actually just like kind of like more thrash stuff from California. And I was like, I have to find all of this. And so my first album I bought myself was Loose Nut, was Black Flag. And it was like, I think I was 12, actually not quite 13. And it kind of propelled me into this other area of music than like people I was hanging out with were listening to. And that was kind of typical for me. So like, even in elementary school, I had kids who I used to hang out with and stuff were like super into like Rick Springfield. I'm old, everybody, so everyone should know that. It's like Rick Springfield and like, you know, like even like Michael Jackson, whatever, like that kind of thing. And I had like posters all over my walls. Like, and this is like third, fourth grade of the Stray Cats. So there was always something like, I liked something a little bit different. I remember being like 4 years old and like My Sharona was my favorite song. And so like, I always liked something that was a little bit different than everyone else was listening to. I got super into hardcore in high school, started going to shows. I think I can never remember my first show, but I remember like some of my first shows at like Blondie's. I used to hang out at Blondie's a lot and see shows. Like, I think I've seen Agnostic Front and Sick of It All. Probably like they just kept on like looping through in the 80s. It was like they kept on coming through. I saw Youth of Today in 1988 there. Yeah, and just like I used to hang out in Pontiac at the Disgust House, which is a hilarious thing, which is like a super old hardcore band from Detroit. And you know, that was kind of like my introduction to it. The thing was for me, which made me different than a lot of my friends that I hung out with, I used to be kind of like referred to as like the mom of the group. Like, I would always take care of everyone and make sure everyone was okay. Every group needs a mom. I probably still the mom of every group, but I would totally, you know, make sure everyone was fine. And like my boyfriend in high school, I remember one New Year's Eve, he like drank too much and was like puked and like passed out. And I like hung out in the room with him at this like huge party, and like some dude was trying to get me to like go hang out with them. I wish I remembered who it was. And he was like, you've got a good one. Cause I like would not leave him. And that was kind of just like my MO in life. And I went to college. I thought I was going to be a finance and economics major. I ended up becoming an art major, which is hilarious in itself. That's a whole story.
Yeah, and that's then, like the complete opposite side of the spectrum there.
Totally. Well, I thought I wanted to be an investment banker because I was like, I just want to make a lot of money. And my family owns a company and like maybe I could have been the controller of it, or like I could have dealt with that kind of stuff. But then I'm like, I fucking hate my life. So I can't keep doing this. And I took photography as like a blow off class, and I ended up like loving it, and I got a BFA in photography and painting. And then I went to graduate school in Chicago at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, and you know, did photo printmaking, but also got my teaching certification. So I taught art for a number of years, and then in Chicago, and then I came back to Michigan and got another master's in art education from Eastern Michigan, and taught at Eastern Michigan for a long time. I was a professor there for quite some time. And then I went back to K-12 teaching, and I was married, and then I got divorced. And during my divorce, the high school boyfriend that I talked about, where he was like puking and I was taking care of him, came back into my life. And,
was he still like puking?
It was worse, but yeah. He was a heroin addict, and I didn't, okay. He told me that he was sober, and I believed him, and it just spiraled out of control for probably, I think, about 3 years. And, I mean, it was just, I was living a life that was not like the life I was meant to live, you know, and not like, I'm a straight edge kid, right? Like, who would have thought that I would be like dealing with dope and being, you know, being straight edge. And, right. we end up breaking up, and he ended up dying of a heroin overdose. And it was just the worst, like one of the worst things that could have happened to me. But also, I hate saying like one of the best, it made me realize that not only would I like to help people who maybe suffer with addiction, but how about the people who are suffering with the addicts? And then I got another master's degree in mental health counseling and school counseling. And I have been doing that for the last few years. And I do a lot of festival work. I do a lot of education and harm reduction and substance use disorder. I'm working on a book right now on art therapy and with the 12 steps. So I'm kind of like trying to bring everything that I've done together. And then, you know, like music is still important to me. So like, I feel like it's important for me to be in places where, you know, people know that they have a person they could talk to or a person who gets like hardcore and also could like help them with like struggles that they're having. And so I've created those kind of spaces at different venues and places when I go to them. So all over the country. Awesome. Been lucky enough to do that.
Yeah. Thanks. Jeremy said you were at Tied Down. Yeah.
Yeah, I was at Tied Down. It was great. It was great. It was, not only did I get to see bands that I love, and, you know, with people I have, you know, long-standing relationships with, which was freaking rad to get to see, like, new bands and old bands play together. But I made a lot of connections with people in Detroit about, like, this is who I am. This is what I do. I gave out probably 50 Narcans and at least 30 test kits for testing drugs and alcohol. I mean, sorry, testing drugs, and gave them information on like Alcoholics Anonymous, different kinds of programs for substance use. I discussed harm reduction, and I actually got some clients out of it, which was awesome, which I'm not going to talk about them, but it was awesome.
No, that's how we met, you know, like everybody's got to deal with shit in life. And I decided that you're going to listen to my bullshit. So I appreciate you for that. And it is because you came from a hardcore background and you understand where people are coming from that scene. You know what I mean? Because, you know, you lived it. So
yeah,
you said that you're working on a book that's art therapy. So yeah. How would music relate into that therapy?
So, I mean, music is a huge part of therapy. I mean, I think any kind of arts, visual, you know, performance, physical art, dance, things like that can be a really important piece when dealing with any kind of mental health issues. I'm a firm believer that talk therapy isn't the only thing that works. For instance, I'm a certified yoga instructor, and I would never teach yoga in the studio. I am not interested in that. But because of that background, like somatic movement is really important if people have a lot of trauma. But I think like music for me has been always really therapeutic. I know when I'm really struggling, I'm really physical. So like I work out a ton. And so like heavy music really kind of puts me into like, I feel better. I get into this space where I'm like, oh, okay. Like I'm good. Cause I think what people look at me and I'm like, always like so happy. Like I'm always like the smiley kid, but I've dealt with some fucked up shit. I hope I can swear on here. Sorry.
Oh, you can. Oh, yeah, but, you can.
Okay. We would have bleeps and cuts if you couldn't.
But like, I mean, I really have dealt with a lot of just fucked up shit on my own. And the thing that has always brought me back to my center has really been hardcore.
Yeah, and fucking so, A, man.
Thanks. So, yeah, I mean, within my book, I'm looking more at visual arts. I will give examples of things that other people can do for other things. You know, being a visual art teacher for so long, I've realized a lot of art therapists don't know how to explain procedures and like how you make stuff to people. And like, they're just kind of like, like you don't know what it is. So like kind of creating, like I'm using kind of all my backgrounds to create this. And also like what helped me, because for me, it wasn't just talking to my therapist. Well, I did go to therapy, you know, while I was going through that breakup. And then after he died of the overdose, I mean, I was going to therapy weekly, but I was also going to Al-Anon, and I was also doing my own kind of journaling, and I was also making art, and I was also working out and listening to music. I mean, I was multifaceted. And I think that that's important for people to be aware of, that it doesn't have to just be one thing. And so, yeah, that answered that question. It was kind of all over the place.
You are one of the most driven people I've ever met. And I mean, you just kind of explained it right there of everything that you do. Where do you think that drive comes from?
Yeah, I was trying to count master's degrees as you were listing them. Three.
Okay. I have three. Yeah. So, and I have a bunch of certifications. So, yeah. I mean, a lot of that was, you know, me trying to fill up a hole inside of me that made me feel like I wasn't enough, but maybe I'd be enough if I got more degrees, maybe I'd be lovable. If I was smarter, if I was.
Yeah. Cause one's not enough. Like,
right.
And insane, man. Three.
Yeah. But you know, like I think, for me, Ray Capo Raghunath often talks about like kind of this God-shaped hole that we have. And I think I was trying to fill in our hearts. And I think I was trying to fill that with accolades and degrees. And so I do think that comes from that. I mean, my dad is super driven. Like I grew up, my mom didn't have to work outside of the home. And my dad was going to work every day at 5:30 in the morning, coming home every day at 5:30 in the afternoons, you know, worked on Saturdays, you know, half the day and then play golf on Sunday. Like my dad was very, like, I'm very regimented like my dad is. And I really, like, I can't imagine not working. So it's funny, we were talking about if I won the lottery, would I still work? I probably would. And I probably would just, any work that I did, I would just either, if people were paying me, I would donate it or I'd ask the people to donate it to an organization.
For sure.
So. Yeah,
'cause even if you're rich, like you still need something to fill your time with. Like people think you're just going to kick back on the couch, but you die of boredom before.
Oh, you can do so much fun shit too with like.
Well, yeah, with all the money.
You can do exactly what you want.
I'm just saying like day to day, like. Going out and spending money isn't going to be your
not even that. I mean, you could build something, you could fucking endless possibilities instead of just.
I mean, I have ideas of what I would do if I won the lottery.
For sure.
I already have it all mapped out because I'm
I think most people do.
I don't play the lottery, so I'll probably never win the lottery.
Play the lottery if I need change. It's so silly. I go to the gas station if I need change, I'm like, oh. I guess I'll buy a Powerball ticket or a Mega Millions.
Oh, so you can break a fucking 10, 20, whatever?
Right, yes.
Gotcha.
So it's your version of a pack of gum then, basically.
Essentially, yeah. And it's like, for this $2, is that worth me dreaming for, you know, 20 minutes or whatever, like on my car ride or wherever I'm going? And for me, that is worth it. It's nice to have those thoughts and dreams.
So in regard to your book... what would be an example of art therapy?
Yeah, so I'm going to give an example of actually something that's not going to be in my book, but something that I do with clients often, if that's okay, just because I want people to, like, you know, be
read the
book.
Oh,
that's new.
Yeah.
Check it out. I mean, it's going to take me a while to finish it because I'm actually also making all the things so, like, I can photograph what an end product might look like. So besides that, I'm making everything. So an example of something that I do a lot with clients is I talk about we have a muse inside of us and we have a critic inside of us. And the critic is the person who, like, is the louder one who talks, like, shit to you. Who's telling you, like, you're a piece of crap, you're not good at that, like, everything must be your fault. Like what I was thinking during that podcast, like, oh my God, what did I do? that kind of stuff, that critic lives inside of you. But then there's the muse, and usually the muse is much quieter, but the muse is like the one who's like, you got this, you can, you know, things are going well, you're good. You know what I mean? And so what I have people do is I have them visualize what their critic looks like. And so I give them an example. I usually show them a drawing that I made. Mine is my critic that I end up drawing almost every time I do this is, do you remember Robot from Lost in Space? Danger,
yep.
Danger, yeah. Will Robinson.
The big right? round dude?
He was just a robot.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so mine's Robot, or he looks like Robot. And so what I have people do is I have them visualize something that they think is like grotesque or something that they wouldn't really listen to if they could really visualize it. So I have them create whatever that looks like. It doesn't have to be pretty. It could be a tornado. I've had people do a bazillion different things of what that looks like. And then what I have them do is with their dominant hand, I have them ask a question, like, what do you want from me? And then with their non-dominant hand, their critic will answer. So it forces someone to A, use both sides of their brains, but it also forces them to slow down and actually think what comes into their head, not what they think that I would want to hear. And so then I would have them write it out with their non-dominant hand. And then from there, I help them and I ask them another question. So I'll use an example of like, what do you want from me? And this is what I would say normally, or when I first time I did it, is I want you to be perfect. And then my question I would ask would be like, what does perfect look like? To be able to be better than everybody. And then I would ask like, why is that important? And that, so I'd have this whole dialogue with this critic.
So it's kind of like unfolding layers of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think the art piece is important because I think visualizing it and realizing it, like, it doesn't have to, it's an ugly thing, right, that lives in us. And it's not a bad thing. It just, we got to figure out how to quiet it down. And so when you're finally asking those questions, you can quiet it down. And now my muse, I usually tell people my muse is actually like my 4-year-old self. I've used this picture a million times for my podcast, or like in general, it's me on a big wheel when I was 4, and I'm wearing like a blue dress with white tights and white shoes. My mom must have like struggled to get me in that thing with my hair in like perfect pigtails. But like, I'm looking at it right now. I'm like for me, my muse is this, she was like, and she still is this little person who lives inside of me who I want to make proud. And what would that little person, before all the garbage came in, all the self-doubt, all the criticism came in, what would that muse want? And so you can either draw it. People really like to use pictures of themselves instead from when they were younger. And then we talk about what that they want. And so that ends up being our therapy-like project that I would do with them.
Okay.
I hope that made sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just curious because I don't know if it's, you know, just you guys are drawing just to come have what comes out and that's the version of therapy, or if there was like an actual like exercise to it.
I think it depends on the people. So again, I was an art teacher and I worked with an art therapist. Like one of my first teaching jobs in the 90s, I worked with at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, I worked with an art therapist and I learned a ton from her as an art teacher. And so I watched a lot of it is about process, right? It's important to have this process and have this outlet, just like so many different things. But what I have found working with art therapists, it's, you don't always have to use it as a diagnostic tool. And that's what I think people use it for normally. I use it for understanding yourself better. I don't have to diagnose it. I don't have to figure out what this means. I want you to figure out what it means. So it gives my clients, whoever I'm working with, it gives them more power. And so that's how I use it. It's not like necessarily the technical way people do art therapy, but
right.
I think it's important.
But I mean, if that's how it works for you, then keep doing it that way.
Yeah, totally. It works for my clients. So that's what's really important.
Right. So for music, like going forward to you becoming the hardcore therapist, like how do you feel music plays a role in mental health?
I feel like it totally plays a role in mental health, but I should probably tell you how I got the name, because I did not come up with the name. Raghunath Ray Kapo has a podcast called Wisdom of the Sages, and it's on daily. And before it switched times, it used to be on at 5 a.m. every day. I actually was on, so it was like live Zoom. I was on it every day. And he would be like, oh, it's Sarah Koretsky, gee. And he would call me the hardcore therapist. And that's like, he kind of came up with it. I don't know where it came from. But then I messaged Parmananda, so Porcel. I messaged him and asked if we could have a conversation. And he was like, yeah, for sure. Cause he's the hardcore yogi. I don't know if you know that, but he is. And I was like, hey man, like, would you be okay if I used the hardcore therapist instead of Sarah Koretsky Wellness, which I had been for years, which I can go into that a little bit again. and a Sakan. And he was like, yeah, I don't own the word hardcore. So, so it was kind of a hilarious conversation. That is
funny.
But I felt like there was like a divine reason. And like, I don't know if people are like going to be like, okay, weirdo who loves religion, but I do think that there was like a divine reason why it came up for me. And so hardcore has been such a part of my life for so long. And it was all about community and building community. And that's my service, I think, to people, is to continue to build community in a healthier way. And that's how hardcore kind of came in. So my whole, like, if I won the lottery and I had no, like, I didn't have to worry about money, I would just be going to festivals and doing education and creating sober spaces for people. And like, that would be, and it would be all based in hardcore. The music for me is so therapeutic, again, as I said, because I could be down in the dumps and I will listen to, I don't know why. I was going to say Warzone. I don't know if it's because I'm like subliminal message over here, Jeremy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like I'd listen to Warzone, or I'd like listen to like a New York hardcore mix, or like I'd listen to my husband's band. Like it doesn't matter. And it's like heavy. And I don't know, like I feel it like kind of like wash away all the problems inside of me. And so having those conversations with people to understand why we've come to hardcore, because I think we all, I'm assuming, have very different backgrounds, right? I mean, I know Jeremy and I have talked, so we have a very different background, but we came to hardcore for the same, I think the same thing, is to feel a sense of community, to feel a sense of belonging, to the music spoke to you in a way. And why not use that to heal yourself? What, I mean, I wish I could play, right?
I was thinking about this before, earlier, like when I got up, and my little brother, he was a big like pop rap hip hop kind of dude, and then when he went to the joint and got out for a little bit, he was like, "You still got that hate breed, you know?" And I remember I gave him a Satisfaction CD, which I'm never getting back, but he was like, "I finally get it now, you know?" And it was like, it was very strange, you know what I mean? Because it was like, you had to go to fucking prison to realize, like, this shit's fucking all right. Like, it's just a way backwards way of thinking. But I think he finally understood, like, where I was coming from, you know what I mean?
For sure. But I also think it's important, like, all music has different, gives people different things. It like,
oh, no doubt.
Again, I mean, I love hardcore, but, like, if I'm at my, like, gym that I work out at, and you know, it's in a big place and they're playing some hip hop, I'm stoked too. Like it has to have the right thing. It's not what I would prefer. And it's hilarious because my coach will like Sarah's hair. So he'll like put like the Bane station on and then it's all good. And people are like, what is this? I'm like, oh, shush. It's all good. You know,
yeah,
listen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I mean, like, I mean, there's other music that has really, really speaks to me. And I think it's important to talk about, like, you know, I know, Jeremy, you know that I'm Krishna conscious and I've talked about it on my podcast before, but like Kirtan, which is the, it's like a religious call and answer. I don't response. I don't know how else to describe it, but with mrdangas, which is like a drum, and kartals, which are like little cymbals, and a harmonium kind of looks like a accordion, but it's on the ground. It has like the bellows and the piano.
Yeah,
and, like,
a little mini guy. Sing.
Yeah. And like, for me, that, like, if it's like a throw down kirtan, like I have the same feeling I get from a hardcore show. So, I mean, I think that's an important thing to say, you know, like hardcore is where I feel like I belong, but a kirtan also can give me the same feeling. The other thing I just want to mention really quick is I did, because I'm a nerd, and I did some research exactly what the word hardcore means. And it's actually on my website. And it says, like, I will work so hard for you to get the outcome you need, essentially. So like, that is also why, you know, why I think hardcore is a great term for who I am and what I do. Because I think I do go at everything like super hardcore. Like I don't like fuck around. I just like, no, I get in.
From my point of view, you definitely do not fuck around.
Yeah, you definitely have the credentials to back that up.
Thanks.
And not to mention, you've raised three kids as well.
Yeah.
So like,
I do have three kids. Two are adults.
That is fucking, that's a feat all on its own.
It is, yeah. Yeah, and they're great kids. And they hate, don't not like hardcore, but they're great.
So am I.
They're amazing. Yeah, they're super cool and they're doing, you know, they're doing good things and they're good people. Like, that was a big thing for me was like, I didn't want my people to ever be like, oh, you have such good, I have two boys and a girl. Such good boys, such a good girl. I'm like, I'm raising them to be good men and a good woman. Like, I want them to be good humans, you know, and I see that in them. So I feel pretty blessed.
Well, that's a reflection of you too. Like, so you want that.
Thanks. Thank you. I mean, and their dad is a great dad, right? So even though we're divorced, we have a really fantastic co-parenting relationship. And I think that's another important thing. If, you know, in hardcore, like there's a lot of, you know, relationship issues that come up. I mean, in life, I mean, what is the rate in the United States is over 50% of people get divorced. So like, you know, or, you know, like I have to say that Steve, that's my ex-husband. He's a great dad. He's a great co-parent and we work well together. So we're lucky.
Yeah. Not everybody has that, or it takes time to develop it for sure.
Yeah, yes. I think being a parent is like it is probably like the most hardcore thing I've ever done, or the most like that you put that effort into it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, if you're going off the literal definition of it, then yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's how you're gonna. And I learned that shit from that music, or from those lyrics, or whatever pushes you into that, like you said, into like a good state. However, I can flip that and like going through a breakup, you're like, I'm going to listen to Joy Division. Bad idea. You know, like things like that. It's just, it's crazy how.
I didn't realize you were so emo.
No, it's just Joy Division. Or, you know, I read that somewhere. Somebody did that.
It's strange how like a band like Joy Division, though, you could take that on a sad day and listen to it, but you could also take it like a happy go lucky day and still listen to it. So it's cool it works both ways like that.
But there's just so many bands. So many different types of music can move you in crazy different ways.
I think everybody's gonna have their own version if music is what speaks to them in their form of therapy, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
Everybody's gonna have their own version of what works for them in that way, and it might not be hardcore, and it, you know, it could be fucking stand-up comedy or something. Like, it could be anything. Like, whatever makes you feel happy,
for sure,
and gives you that sort of release. So I know you can't talk about clients, and I'm not gonna ask about that, but as a therapist, how have you used music to help people?
I think just connecting. I mean, and I can't. So the hardcore therapist, my company, you know, is my personal clients. I definitely talk about and use music and talk about connections and stuff like that. I do work at a private practice where I don't use music as much. Okay. I have a person who's into ska, so sometimes we'll talk about some music stuff as well, but overall it doesn't really come up as much. I really meet clients where they're at and what they need, and you know, like the term eclectic when it comes to therapy is not usually a good term to use, but it's hard to think of another word. So, you know, if I have a 67-year-old Christian man who is in recovery from alcohol use disorder and, you know, weed and, you know, that, he needs something very different than my, you know, 5-year-old that I see.
Right.
And so, you know, I really have to individualize that. if people are interested in music, I talk about how they can use it as a benefit within, within their day. And like, you know, I always ask people like, you know, if they're like, let's say they're depressed, like, you know, what helps you to be in a better mood besides medication, obviously, but like what else can help you? And if they talk about music, we talk about the kind of music and, you know, how it can like the vibrations and how important it is to, you know, to listen and get from it. But again, it just, again, I go client by client. So, I mean, my hardcore clients, hell yeah. I was talking to one of my clients about nails and like the other day, right? And going to the show and how I was bummed out that, you know, I didn't know until like yesterday or the day before yesterday that I could go. And then I'm like, oh, it's sold out. Sweet. So, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I'll talk about music and I'll ask them how it feels. And we talk about moshing and what that looks like and, you know, what they get out of that. And, you know, it's, you know, they can see it more as part of a therapeutic process when we talk it through in that way.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Now you wanted to talk about moshing, didn't you? I'd like to because I'm on the side of,
I was going
to
bring it up, but
I'm on the side of, I love that shit. However, I understand why other people are like, that's fucked up, because there's a lot there. Like there's, to me, there's a respect, and I see a lot of the crowd killing fucking teenagers. Like they don't have any respect or know what's up. So I could see that being like a problem, and I totally like.
Well, I feel like once one catches a beat down for being an asshole, their respect may change.
But that's like, that's the difference, though, is like somebody's going to have to catch a charge because there's cameras everywhere, you know, right? But yeah. Go ahead. How do you, like, you don't like moshing, or you don't, not that, no, you don't like moshing.
I do like moshing, right? Like, I do. I mean, I don't mosh. Like, I don't mosh. It's just not. If you ever see me in a crowd, I am literally smushed up against the stage and I'm literally like jumping up and down.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Like that's how I go. Jeremy, I think we maybe talked about this one time, but like I'll explain it, Ryan. Like I have to be smushed up against the stage at a show if I'm at a show. Because if I know what's going on behind me, I'm a fucking anxious mess.
Oh, like, yeah, I cannot, that makes sense.
So I just want to focus on the band. I can watch if people are going to jump on me. I can watch that. Like, I am good. I am in it. Like, I feel like I'm stealthy. I'm good. But if I ever get caught up in a crowd, like so my husband played in San Francisco in August. And Invocation, I don't know if you guys know Invocation. They're a Krishna core band from Bay Area. You should listen to their stuff. They're fucking amazing. Anyway, so
oh, and your husband's band, Second Coming, right?
Yes, I am wearing their shirt today. Out. Second Coming. Yes, we love Second Coming. I will totally shout them out in a minute. But while Invocation was playing, my husband and I were standing like kind of side stage because I was like, I don't want to get, it was like lots of young kids. I don't want to get all caught up in that shit. Fucking got popped in the nose.
You did?
Yes. Like tears coming down, tears coming. And I will be honest with everyone, and everyone should know this about me. I do not appear as someone who is very violent, but I wanted to kill that person. Like I literally like went and like went to grab them, and then like my husband was like, what the hell, like I'm like, and then I just decided to walk away, right? Because my instinct is, and I have done this at shows before, and this is why I don't think I like marching, is right. Because my own reaction, I will fucking grab someone and like throw them out of my way. I'm a big girl, like I'm not small. Like if you're gonna knock into me or kick me in the head,
see, that is me and Jeremy have talked about this before. That's the exact reason that I don't.
And that's like the exact reason I do. Because in a fucked up way, I like that shit. I like Same, being in control.
But it's not good.
I'm retired now, but like too old for that bullshit. But looking back, that's exactly why I did it, because I was in control. And I was with all my friends, and I knew if I got fucked up, somebody's gonna pick me up, and it just can continue on. And yeah, people got busted noses and broken fucking fingers and whatever, knocked out, this, that, and the other. But it was like the fucking best time of our lives too. You know what I'm saying?
I got that. But like, I think one of the problems that is happening now, I'm older than you guys. So like, I think in the 80s and 90s, right? Like there was a huge show at this church in Detroit, and I am really bad at this. So I'm the worst person to have on here to be like two played. I know all played. I can't remember everyone who played. It was a big show. Like it was a huge freaking show. And I got swept up in the pit, going around, and got like someone like stepped on me weird, and I got like, I'm on the ground. All these fucking dudes come out and pulled me out of there, right? This happened a few years ago. I was at a show at Sanctuary. Some dude fucking, you know, crowd killing. I don't even know what he was doing. I was standing by a merch table. Fucking smacked into me. I went flying into the merch table. The merch table, like, stuff fell over. No one helped me up, and no one said anything to me.
That's fucked up.
Right? That, to me, that's fucked up. I feel like there's a difference now with, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe it's because I'm not in the, like, I'm not in the know. And that's possible. I mean, I don't go to shows every week anymore. I'm not like in the cool kid at the club. I'm the old lady. Right?
I don't think it has anything to do with hardcore, though. Somebody falls down, a woman falls down, you fucking help them up. Like,
Yeah, that's just general, like, manners.
That's lost.
But, I don't know that that has so much to do with the music as much as, like, the younger generation doesn't always have that. Not that they don't. There's plenty who do, I'm sure.
Right. But the next part I was going to say about the show that I was at, Second Coming was playing, some girl got knocked out, like, and no one helped her up. I mean, finally made sure she got where she was supposed to. And I can't remember that Field of Flames was the band that was playing. And they were like, we got to look out for each other, you know, blah, 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 blah. And people are still killing people. Like, and to me, that's where I'm like, ooh. I worry about that indifference.
Is Invocation the band with that younger kid in it? It sounds kind of like 108.
Yeah, Krishna Das.
Okay.
Is in that band. Yeah.
I was like, okay, I know it now. I just had to.
They're doing a whole West Coast run in October. They are probably one of my favorite bands. I mean, I was gonna say of all time, but new bands,
definitely
probably my favorite band right now.
That's cool to hear.
Yeah, they're great. There's a few really cool bands coming out of like California right now, younger bands that are pretty rad. So
shit popping off everywhere. I love it.
Shit's popping off everywhere. So cool thing about that show that I was at that I was talking about too was so my husband's band, Second Coming, which they're great. They're OG Bay Area hardcore. And they had a reunion show last year and they played a few times. But this show was so cool. Joey Bella, who was on my podcast, great skateboarder, great human being, my husband's best friend. Love him, love his wife, love his kids, greatest. His son, who is a senior in high school, he was in three bands and those three bands played at that show.
Wild.
So it was super cool. It's like these 50-year-old dudes playing and then these 16, 17, 18-year-olds playing and all together. And it was rad. So I wanted to shout that out. That's super cool.
That is cool. It's kind of like how like Ghostface Killah's kid is rapping now. And I think like one of Method Man's kids is, and Raekwon maybe. They got like a little junior Wu-Tang collective.
Yeah, that's sick.
ODB's kid too.
He's been doing it for a minute, like replacing him, I think, on tours and shit or shows that they do.
And he has his dad down, like fucking
young,
like,
dirty.
It almost looks like a reincarnation of.
It's wild.
It's wild how much he looks like him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love to see.
I hope I answered that question.
I love to see the. I noticed that too. Is the. Like there's that generation gap, but everybody's there for the get more or less the same reason. And I like how like Berthold City just came out with an album yesterday, and they have a song on there that's just about like getting older and fucking 20 years going by and you're still like out fucking pounding pavement trying to fucking get shit done, but you did all this other crap and you're still, you know what I mean? It's like shit that you can totally relate to. And not,
for sure,
not at a, you know, my parents fucking kicked me out, my girlfriend's pregnant, shit, what am I gonna do type of shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, kinda, well, I mean,
we're
some,
like over
somebody,
that, you know?
Somebody somewhere probably is like, that's my song.
Yeah,
right
yeah, it's just,
hey,
not, it's just not mine.
That's my anthem.
Yeah.
It may have been years ago, but not so much anymore.
Yeah, that happened
Nancy Burrell and I were actually, talking about, like aging in hardcore and aging in punk, and like the importance of having conversations about that as well.
That's a great episode too. People should probably check that out.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, but it's important. I think it's in some important work. I've been doing a lot more work on grief and understanding grief. You know, because I mean, I think that there is a fair amount of people in the hardcore community that. We're dealing with grief right now. There's people, you know, who are getting sick, who are dying all around us. People who have been in our lives for a long time. I mean, family members, but I mean, even in our community. And like, what do we do with that?
Yeah, we were just interviewing a guy yesterday who had quite a bit of that going on.
No, it yeah. When we post that interview, his story is pretty insane.
It'll be... Yeah. Well, this will be after, so we can talk about it. But yeah, it'll be like 2 weeks from now, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that was Vadim's story about Stephen John on my podcast. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are younger dudes. I mean, they're like your age. They're like, you know, late 30s, early 40s, and talking about, you know, people dying in their lives. And, you know, him, you know, Vadim talking about his, you know, one of his best friends. And, you know, maybe we should be talking more about that in the hardcore community. Because, I mean, people are dying. I mean, people are dying because people die, right? Like, that's just it. But then also, if we're talking about, you know, mental health issues or we're talking about substance use issues, like, that should be bigger conversations
that we're having. That sort of grief can sometimes lead to that stuff, like mental mm-hmm. health and substance abuse and et cetera. So it is important to talk about it. And, like, talking about it doesn't change the fact or bring them back, but like having somebody to vent that to can help you process it. However, you got to get, you know, learn to live with it because it's not going to go away, but you know, you have to learn how to let it be a part of you.
For sure. I agree. And you know, and it's okay to be happy, or it's okay to, you know, go on with your life if someone passed away in your life. And I think people have a hard time with that. They don't want to, they, you know, like you're allowed to still live. The person who passed away wants you still to live.
Like that survivor's guilt type of thing, mm-hmm. sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
But if you had somebody like, you know, a parent or a significant other that was suffering and they passed and it was a good thing because they were no longer in pain, like I've seen that too, where people are happy that their parents have passed because they're no longer suffering, which I feel like some people from the outside looking in could be like, what the fuck's wrong with this person? Like they shouldn't be like smiling right now. But you know, if you watch somebody going through all that, like laying in a hospital bed for months on end or in a house in their hospital bed, like I can see how it would be a relief to, you know, be like, they moved on.
For sure. I think that's a super important piece because I also think everyone's grief and how they handle it is so different too. And I think people think that you know, you have to go through all the stages of grief and like, you know, but they're not, it's not linear, right? It can happen. Like you can have anger at the beginning and then you can have sadness somewhere else. And then you can have bargaining somewhere else. Like it doesn't have to be a linear thing.
Yeah, it's fucked up. A couple years can go by and something can like fucking hit you.
I've heard a lot of times that it's
all comes out, dude. It's crazy as fuck.
In like marriages, like when your husband or wife dies, I've heard a lot of times that like everything leading up to the funeral, all that stuff, like it doesn't hit you until you go home and get back to your day to day life without that person, and then it hits you.
Yeah,
because that shit would be like a fucking dream until you go back to the...
Yeah, because you're constantly go, mm-hmm. do this, talk to this person, you know, do whatever.
Somebody's giving you a
handful. And then you go back home to sit down in silence and realize that you're by yourself. Like, that shit's got to be rough.
Yeah, and I think I still think it's different for everyone, too, and I think...
Unless you know, their significant other sucked and they're like, he's out of the house.
I think it happens sometimes.
Like people will talk about like, sorry, Jeremy.
You're good.
No, so like people will talk about like, I'm this older guy and he was like, I feel guilty that I'm happy that my wife is gone. And then he talked about it and he explained like she was suffering. She was an ass. While she was suffering, like she was very mean, and she didn't remember anything. So on top of like having an illness, she had dementia, and so she was like super mean to him and would throw shit. It was horrible.
So that's like a good example of somebody that would be relieved that somebody passed,
right? Totally.
Yeah, and the other person wouldn't even like, you know, mentally be there,
right?
But I was gonna say earlier, we fucking, at least me. And I think I can speak for you too, but correct me if I'm wrong, but we look at death a lot, I guess, in a different light than some people, like you said earlier, might think it's weird, but I don't see death as an issue, I guess.
It's inevitable. Like,
yeah, exactly. I mean, like, that shit's happening one way or another, so right. Like...
I will say I probably think about it a little more than the average person on a day-to-day basis, but not in like a, oh my God, this might kill me way, just like a, what am I going to do, you know, how am I going to leave my kid off well, like after I'm gone type of thing.
Right, right.
Yeah. I think for me, I mean, I believe in reincarnation, so it's like,
right.
Death is, like your soul keeps living, so that's kind of rad, but I also think that I have no control over when people are going to die. And so that gives me some peace, you know, and it helps me kind of process people's, or, you know, my own like grief. I mean, when I haven't said his name, but I'm going to say it, people know who it is. So when Dennis died, I was a train wreck, but I went to like, it happened at 8:30 at night. I found out I went to work the next day.
Cause you're just in that fucking...
I didn't know what to do and it was rough, but then like, you know, like Ryan, like what you were saying, like I was relieved, like that poor man isn't going to have to suffer anymore through that addiction.
Right.
You know, but, you know, I also can't hold, like I can't hold on to attachment in that way. And it sounds cold when I say that, but again, things happen because they're supposed to. I believe in that. I believe that things happen exactly when they're supposed to happen. And you know, and that, you're right. Death is inevitable. But yes, I also agree, like making sure your legacy or whatever, your shit's kind of set up for people is important.
We got to put all the subscription info for our podcast in our wills so people can keep the streaming keep after we die.
It just made me think though, because Ramblin' Ron came in and he's a customer around here and he was talking.
I have little nicknames for a lot of the customers.
It's funny. He does ramble.
Yeah.
But we were talking about like riding a motorcycle or something and he was like, like he was like, you get hurt on that. Like, you know, he's an older guy. And I'm like, kind of like, what? Why are you scared, man? You know, oh, I'm not ready for that, you know? And I almost felt like bad for him, you know what I mean? I'm like, damn, why you gotta live with all that like fear and shit? I don't know.
No, for sure.
Yeah,
I hear you.
Ron, he's an interesting
dude.
That's all I'm gonna say about that. I know he's not listening to this.
It's like, man, yeah. I got these Beatles. He's like, I got these Beatles albums. Man, they're on mono. Jeremy, you have these? You have these? I'm like, no, man, I got enough Beatles.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got to get these, man. How many do you have? How many do you have?
He's got,
I don't know, like 15 or 16. Like, he's already owns like a million copies of it. So
he's
funny.
Like a compulsive buyer. Like, he'll buy the same stuff that he has. And we have a couple of these, actually, where they come in, flip through, and you might be like, oh, this is new. Like, this is new. Check this out. This is like this, if you like that or whatever. Like, give them recommendations. And they'll just buy what they know, even though you're like, you just bought that a week ago. Like, I know you have it, and I know you've had it for 30 years prior to that. Like, why are you buying another one? Like, and he'll buy Ted Nugent.
I think he has got 47? Like
50.
Oh, 50 now?
50 plus free-for-all Ted Nugent albums.
Holy shit. Last I heard, it was at 47 or something.
That sounds like OCD to me.
Ron is something else.
I don't know what it is. Like, the one guy, the other guy, not Ron, I think it's, like, his way of reliving his childhood. Like, every time he, like, finds that record again, he's like, oh, my God. Like, he gets that little burst of excitement, and then he rebuys it. Ron, I'm not sure. I haven't figured him out. The other guy, I think that's what it is, but this one, I don't know. Ron's
just I could
just
definitely see that, yeah. You know, the getting that little bit of, like,
who's
dopamine.
Who's to say, like, maybe when we're 70, we're going to go into a store and be like, oh, cool. Sisters of Mercy Floodlands, like, already got four of them,
yeah,
but I
yeah,
need another one.
Yeah, for sure.
It could happen. So we're giving them shit now, but we're going to be the old guys, like, rebuying fucking
I could
bunch
say,
of metal records.
Yeah, I can think of a handful of records I would
guy.
Do that.
No, I'm not the old guy that would do that, by the way. I'm just saying I would never do that.
Do you,
not my thing.
Do you collect records or no?
Oh, and I think this is why I don't anymore.
Jeremy? Talk about your records.
I had a really bad flood. I don't know if you all remember that. I think it was 2013.
Fucking sad.
Oh, man, I already don't like the end of this story, but yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah, in like the Berkeley, Michigan, Royal Oak area.
Okay. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So in my basement, I had crates of 7 inches, mostly 7 inches, and some full length albums. I probably had 5 or 6 full crates of all 80s and 90s hardcore, like first release stuff. Like, and I had 3 feet of water in my basement, and it wasn't just water; it was sewage.
Right.
So I lost everything.
Can't get the poo stains off the old close my eyes 7-inch.
No, and
you could
so
if you close your eyes.
And so I had to get rid of everything. Also, all my camera equipment, a ton of my artwork.
Sucks.
It was like so much stuff. Some, you know, just like old memorabilia, things that I had from. I had like tickets and different kinds of things like that, just gone. So I don't really have much of a record collection anymore. I do have some records and I do have some 7 inches. I did a little, so when Dennis first died, he and Andy Rich started Initial Records. I don't know if you remember or heard of Initial Records. It was like, ended up being in Louisville and it started in Michigan. And so, like, By the Grace of God, Guilt, like, these bands, these Louisville bands were on Initial Records. And so right after he died, I actually was looking for, like, if I could get as many Initial 7-inches as I could. And I did. And then I just realized, like, it wasn't good for me to do it. So I stopped. But, I mean, like, you know, Quicksand's, like, one of my favorite bands. I have a ton of Quicksand stuff and Rival Schools. Like I have like a Walter thing. So like, you know, pretty much all of that Shelter. Pretty, there's certain things that I have and I'm like, I have them because I do, but I have an extensive t-shirt collection. I probably have 600 band t-shirts ish.
I thought I had a lot. I'm not even close to that.
I had a time when I was teaching art still that my students were like, could not believe. They're like, I don't believe you have all these band t-shirts. I wore a different band t-shirt every day to school to show them. And I was not even like a quarter way through.
2 years, man, you could wear it. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I am trying not to be like holding on to all these material possessions, but that is probably the hardest thing for me not to buy more of or get rid of.
Yeah, you remember where you were when you got that shirt and so on and so forth.
I have a Fugazi. This is not a Fugazi shirt. They made, like, someone made them in the 90s and, like, Fugazi okayed it because it was, like, hilarious because Fugazi didn't have merch.
Right.
I still have that shirt. I will not wear that shirt. Just, you know. But I haven't. I can't, like, I can't part with that shirt.
People who are music fans, like, your shirt is, like, your badge of honor, kind of. Like, at least that's how I've always looked at it. Like, that, you know, you're expressing what you like to listen to. Same for with, like, battle vests and stuff with patches all over them and shit. Like, that's, like, putting, in a way, your heart on your sleeve, kind of. Like,
for sure. I just had patches made. You just said that. I was like, oh, I had patches made.
Oh, that's what's up. I like your magnets, too. That was really cool.
Oh, thank you.
Can use those. Always use magnets, dude, for the refrigerator and whatnot.
I will send you more magnets. I think I have more that, like, I don't know which one I don't remember which one
it's
I sent
you. It's a little cassette tape.
What color was that? I have multiple of those.
It was black and white, I think. Black and white? Black,
was it black
and white?
One purple? Or, oh, okay, was that one? I have the purple one too, and then I have like the hat. I have that in a magnet also.
I'm not gonna say no to free magnets
and stickers and things.
I love it.
Are you hanging your coloring pictures on your fridge or something?
Nikolai's, yeah.
What, he's 17?
I still have some of his pictures hanging up though.
Really?
I don't know why.
From high school. A friend of mine has that too. Like, he's got his kids, like, his kid's like 15 now, but he's got work from like second grade hanging on his fridge.
Oh, not that bad.
And the magnet that's holding it is a picture of Jeffrey Dahmer that says, if you can't beat him, eat him.
Jesus. Oh my God.
That's ridiculous.
But it's like a color picture of like a blue duck or something. Like, I'm like, dude, you ever going to get rid of this thing?
No. My daughter put her second grade picture up on my refrigerator a little while ago. So every time, like, I go to my refrigerator, I see, like, she's 17 also. I, like, see, like, 7-year-old Layla. It's pretty cute.
I have nothing on my fridge because it irritates me having stuff on my fridge.
Oh, mine's on the side. Oh, I can't have this on the front. Yeah, it has to be on the side.
That makes sense. I don't even think stuff sticks to the front of my fridge because it's stainless steel. Like,
Oh, it'll stick.
Will it? I've never tried just because I don't like it. So.
There's a little bit of ledge in there.
But I wanted to ask about your podcast, like, diverting from where we're at. How long have you been doing that for?
So I started it last year, but I didn't really start it until January. Like, I didn't know what I was going to do. Like, I did a podcast a long time ago with my friend Kyle and my friend Clay. I don't even remember what year it was. I want to say 2014, like when podcasts were first starting. And it was so fun and I loved it. So, and it was short. Like, I think we only did like 6 episodes or something because Kyle took on all the work to edit it and stuff. So I was like, if I'm going to do a podcast, I'm not doing that shit.
They say most don't last past 7 episodes, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, that's not true with us, right?
Yeah.
So I really started it in January. So in January, I asked Parmananda to be my first podcast guest, and he was, which was rad. But so when I started, like, after I kind of got like a feel of what I wanted to do, I committed to making sure I put out at least once a week an interview and once a week a question. Like, someone asks me a question about mental health. I call those my point fives. I do them in the middle of the week. I do some research on it. I take notes. I then like use my notes as some sort of outline, but I kind of talk about my own experience by a question that someone would ask. And so sometimes it's hard, like sometimes I don't have any questions. So I'm like, what was a question that kept on coming up in therapy this week that I could maybe talk about, maybe other people would be interested in?
Yeah.
Like for instance, this last week I did like, what if your kid is resistant to go into therapy? And so I talked about that. Those are just me talking. It is like me just doing 15 to 20 minutes of talking about whatever the subject is. And I think it's nice to only do one question because you can really dig in deeper on that one question rather than just like saying, if like someone asked me like, how do you find a good therapist? And I just say it really quick in 2 minutes. I think I did like a 20 minute episode on that, like what to look for, what kind of questions to ask and things like that.
Throw them your card, like, here you go. Yeah. Episode done.
Yeah, you don't need anyone else. You got me. I will tell you, I do not accept everybody. So, and I don't think everyone should accept me as their therapist. But my interviews are rad. So I have people within the hardcore community in some way, right? So, either they were in bands, they, you know, do things within the community, all of that. And I interview them, and my purpose of doing that and doing it a little bit different than what I think most podcasts are is I ask them why hardcore is always the first question I ask, but then I want to know their story. Like I want to know their story and then how they think that like hardcore mental health affects them. And, you know, some people have been freaking amazing and some people it's been more difficult. Because I think they're expecting me to ask them, like, tell me about this album. Tell me about this. I don't do that.
Right.
Yeah, right.
I don't do that at all. I probably couldn't sometimes tell you, like I had someone ask me, like, what my favorite, like, name my three top albums. I got, like, sweaty and flustered. Like, I can't do that. That's just not who I am.
It's hard to narrow that down, and it changes, like, day to day, so.
Oh, for sure. I was, like.
Three?
Three. I was, like, Burns first. 7-inch, like that was like, I'm like, that was the most perfect thing I've ever heard in my life. But yeah, so just kind of hearing their story and you know, I'm very blessed to be kind of a ballsy girl, and I will ask anyone to be on my podcast. I don't care if I know you or don't know you. I've asked people, like I do a big ask every week. So I asked someone.
Told me that. That's a good idea.
Yeah. So I sometimes I answer and sometimes I don't. But I did a big ask with someone who did answer was Kara Rossler, who was in Black Flag. I had no idea who she is. Like, I mean, I knew she played in Black Flag, right? Like, but man, her freaking story was amazing. And it was great, you know? So I do that. And then I also really try to, as much as I possibly can, at least one episode a month, I try to have a woman in hardcore. Because I think that we've done a lot of stuff in hardcore and we're underrepresented when it comes to being on podcasts. So yeah, I focus on different women. Like this next podcast that's coming out for me, which will be after this comes out, her name is Carmen Sussman. She wrote a book about, it's called In Between Shows. And it talks about, like, it's a fictional book, but it talks about, like, what happened in her life in between shows. And then she would talk about going to different shows. That's cool, right? Or, like, I talked to the women of the pit. Or Danielle Dabrowski is going to be on my podcast, to the photographer who is at all the shows. So, you know, I think it's important. And I think it's important to hear people's stories and see them in a different light than just, like, you're in my favorite band and I'm going to fangirl over you and stuff, yeah. Which sometimes I do.
Like, yeah, like if I, you know, Walter was like, hang on to my coat. You're like, I'm a coat
rat. Walter's going to be on my podcast, so stop that.
Oh, sorry. Hello, Walter. Mad respect, sir. Mad respect.
No. But for real, like, you know, I fangirled a lot. Like, since I saw him the first time playing when I was 16, and I was like, there's something special about this human. And I believe he is the most influential singer-songwriter of our time, or my time, to be honest. Yes. So I feel like I just got super red in the face talking about him. So.
Oh, no, you're good.
I'm going to put it out there. Don Rossington, my husband, also fantastic songwriter. Just want to put it out there, baby.
Yeah, dude, you got to let it
redeem yourself a little.
Yeah, there you go. Shout out to Don, yeah. Dude. You're all good.
Yeah, podcasting's fun like that because you get to talk to people that you don't really expect that you would get to talk to. Or at least, like, because you have a reason to. Like, otherwise, you know, just messaging somebody on Instagram to be like, dude, you're fucking awesome. It only goes so far. Like, right. You might get a thumbs up or something. But when you get to, like, sit and actually have a one-on-one conversation, or in mine and Jeremy's case, a two-on-one conversation, it's fucking awesome. Because, like, if you told me we were going to be talking to Mike Score or Craig Holloway or, you know, people like, you know, Len from Earth Mover, like, shit like that, like, bands that I listened to, like, as a teenager that you never thought you'd be talking to for any reason other than seeing them at a show or something and being like, that was fucking sweet.
Yeah. I mean, that was, like, Kira was definitely, like, one of those people where I'm like, she's, like, an icon, like, and I talking to her. But even, like, I had, I interviewed Sammy last week. He'll be on in October. And, I mean, he is the busiest drummer in all hardcore, but he is like, was so rad to talk to, and he was great. And he really like gave me a snippet into what his life looks like. And I thought that was super cool. So, you know, or even Raghunath, who obviously, you know, I know him, you know, I talked a lot about his book, but I think I asked him some hard questions that, you know, it got to know him in a better way. And I think it gave people a different perspective.
It gave me a different perspective on him for sure. But that was because of those questions, because I think up until that point, I mean, with the book, most people were just kind of letting him promote the book and just kind of like talk about the same stuff he's talked about for like 30 years. You know what I mean? Not to say there's anything wrong with that because he's trying to sell a book, but like, I like when he gets into the,
well, yeah, if you already, brain. Like, know the details going right. into, like, and you...
And it was a great book.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, everybody should check that shit out. It's fucking gnarly that his life is it's pretty fantastic, yeah.
Podcasts have a way of peeling back those layers, though. And there's many...
I'm going to ask you guys a question. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Who has been your most surprising guest that you've had?
Surprising,
mm-hmm.
I would say for me probably Craig Holloway, because he doesn't really do a whole lot of like press or podcasts or anything like that, and we just had like, I don't know if it was luck or what it was, but like we had interviewed Beast, and I think that kind of helped, like from Hate Inc. And then they listened to that episode and I guess some other ones, but to like to have him tell us that he's listening to us like in his spare time was like wild. Holy shit, like that was crazy to me.
Totally.
Yeah, I would say that one for sure.
Okay, what about you, Jeremy?
For me, it was Mike Scores, because kind of the same reason like with you and Walter. It was like I've been listening to All Out War since I was a kid, and then. Yeah. And he's such a down-to-earth, like, cool-ass dude.
And I think I have to say, we did all right. We did good. But, like, looking back now, like, we're so much better off.
But I'm just, that's why I think that interview was, like, kind of like a, watershed moment for us as far as, like.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, because that kind of was like, holy shit, this is fucking awesome. And then, subsequently, you know, Craig Holloway, it's like just Ryan said.
Even Chubby Fresh was pretty surprising.
Chubbs was like what?
Because One Life Crew doesn't do a whole lot of shit either. Like,
No, it's
Stu Bang is too. That was really surprising because it was like our 7th or 8th interview or something. And like this guy's worked with like Vinny Paz and Jadakiss and Apathy.
Like
and
his beats are like $600.
Yeah, like, I don't know. And just ridiculous. For him to... Him to give us a chance was really cool.
Okay. All right, I'm going to ask you more questions. I like this. Turning the tables. how do you think hardcore has helped your mental health?
Go ahead, Jeremy.
Oh, that shit. I mean, you know, but
I know, but no one else.
I know. I'm just saying, like, on a that shit saved my life, man, for real, and gave me a sense of it's like the same shit. Like a lot of people say, community, this and that, but like, I have like a handful of fucking homies that I grew up with in that shit that I could call like right now, and they would listen to me fucking complain or hear what's going on or whatever. Like, I know I can, and they can too. And it happens from time to time. But it also gave me, it helped. I didn't have like people, I don't like, if you don't have a male figure in your life showing you how to live or how to become a quote unquote man or make it in the world, I had to depend on a lot of other sources for that shit. And I think hardcore had a positive impact on pushing me to like finish fucking high school for one, or just, you know, because it always is like better yourself, perseverance, you know, break down the walls, however style you want to take it, you know. Open your eyes. Yeah. Like Warzone, that's why I always go to Warzone, because that shit always puts me in a good mood and always makes me want to be a better fucking person, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
For me, I've never, like, considered myself to be, like, a hardcore kid, really. Like, I got into hardcore a little later, like, hip-hop and punk would have come first, and like metal stuff, and then I kind of found hardcore out of punk. So I wouldn't say that it's done like a ton, but like I love like the camaraderie behind it, and like everybody else has said, the positive outlook on things and that sort of stuff. But to me, like, what helped me along was hip-hop mostly. Like, that was a lot of the stuff that spoke to me, not so much like gangster rap or anything, but like conscious sort of hip-hop things that make you think. And
like Tribe Called Quest?
Yeah, like Tribe Called Quest, or like Pete Rock, CL Smooth, yeah. Or like even going into like Atmosphere, like Aesop Rock, stuff like that. Like, a lot of that was like day-to-day problems sort of hip-hop, not so much like street problems sort of hip-hop, because I didn't grow up in that, you know, surrounding, so I could relate to it from the outside looking in, but not as like a, this is going to help me get through this sort of thing.
I got that. That's cool.
I got definitely shout out Atmosphere as an influence for sure. When, you know, Minnesota.
Well, dude's a good writer. Like, he knows how to, like, paint. Yeah, and, like, instead of rapping about, like, bitching about his girlfriend now, like, now he's talking about his male lady and stuff.
Yep, yeah, which funny. Is,
but he still makes it enjoyable, like.
Yeah.
That would be awesome to get fucking Slug and Ann on.
I've actually reached out to Slug before, but I've never gotten an answer yet. I would Ant too. Like, I would, when I reached out, I was like, either one of you guys would be fucking awesome. But
I think that's an important, I think that's an important thing in life, whatever it is, right? Is to do something that takes you a little bit out of your comfort zone. This is a big, I'm going into big ass thing. So like, I think I just said big ass, not big ask, but okay.
We're moving into big asses in the podcast.
No, but I think it's important because, like, you don't do a lot of learning in your comfort zone,
yeah.
Right? You do. Your learning is in your stretch zone. So you're stretching and you're willing to do something that scares you a little bit, like ask people to be on your podcast that you would never. It's going to, A, make your podcast better, and B, make you a better interviewer, and then also teach you more about who you are.
So I'll say this, when people answer back, like, whoever's, like, big in our minds, when they answer us back, it's like, it just gives me more confidence to ask the next person and the next person. And I will say, I've been surprised, like, 9 out of 10 times, I'm, like, totally surprised in a good way.
Usually people are pretty cool, right. But, I mean, I've never had, like, a fuck you, no, we won't do it. I've had no answers before.
I'm good with no answers. Like,
yeah, but
I'm not great with no answers if if they read it and they don't answer you.
Oh, I got that.
I'm not super stoked with that. I think that that's not so nice. And then maybe I don't want them.
I guess I'd rather be not them say anything than be like, fuck you.
You guys ain't shit.
Yeah.
Podcasting definitely was, not so much anymore, but now, like in the beginning, it definitely was like out of my comfort zone because I'm not a big talkative person or an outgoing talkative person. However, if we're talking about something that I enjoy, then I can have like a long conversation on it. But I am not a good small talker by any means. And so to talk to strangers and stuff, it was a little weird at first when we started doing interviews. It took a little bit to get used to. But I think at this point, like now, it's been a while since I've been like, man, I'm kind of nervous about this interview. Like, it's just second nature, really, at this point.
Totally. I got that. I'm a professional yapper, so I don't have any issues. My daughter, that I think she's going to get me a shirt that says professional yapper. But that's cool that you do that. I'm glad that's something that you found, you know, that works for you and that, you know, you're doing something you love. So it makes it easier to get you out of that comfort zone.
Yeah. And it's always a learning process too, like between the interviewing side of things or the technical side of things. Like there's always an obstacle to overcome in podcasting, I feel like, because there's been plenty of times where Jeremy and I are back here like pulling the little hair that we have on our heads out trying to figure out whatever.
For sure. But it's like all, you know, and that's kind of where the punk and the hardcore attitude comes back into the, you know, the DIY shit.
Yeah.
And that whole attitude, you know.
That's where the hardcore attitude is, the doing the most for to sure. get the best out of.
Fucking A.
And we do this all ourselves. Like, we don't have people writing our stuff. We don't have an editor, a camera guy. Like, we've started from a tiny-ass little fold-out table and worked it up to where it is now.
That's rad.
That's how you do it, too. Am I right?
I mean, I just put it out in the ether. Like,
yeah, you just
I do my thing. And then I just put it out there. And if there's mistakes in it, it's life. I want it to feel as authentic and real as possible. So I'm like, I'm not editing anything. I have thought about doing like visual, like having like the YouTube thing, but I have not done that yet.
It mostly helps. It takes a minute for it to like start helping. But once people start to like catch on, then it does seem to help, especially like cutting up Instagram reels, because I've noticed far more people are willing to share a reel of like a conversation of people going on rather than just like a picture that I made on Photoshop.
Good to know. I mean, I have definitely done that, but I feel like I don't have time. I feel bad saying that, but like I don't have a lot of time. That's why it just goes out into the ether.
No, and that makes sense. And like, honestly, though, for video editing, I think it takes, for me at least, less time. Because I'm more kind of just putting it out how it goes because I don't like it to look all choppy. But I will cut out, like, you know, if somebody has to go to the bathroom or whatever, like, I'll cut out, like, a little segment. Or if we have technical issues, like, I'll fade it in as well as I can and stuff like that.
There's not a whole lot of fucking shit that you cut out anymore, ever.
No. So when we were doing...
fucking good.
Yeah. When we were doing audio only, I would listen to the entire episode and cut out everything that was not meant to be there. So it was almost perfect.
Super time-consuming.
Yeah. It was almost perfect, but with the right amount of ums and ahs still to make it feel like an authentic conversation.
Yeah.
But it took me probably double the time.
Yeah. No, thanks. I don't want to do any of that.
So the video side of things, like, I mean, if you're just the type of person that's going to put it out how it comes out to be in its raw, authentic form, then I would say go for it because you're not going to have any extra added time than what you're already doing, really.
Okay.
You might have a couple things that you're like, damn, how do I do this? And if you need...
I just have to stop scratching my face all the time. Like, that would be my thing. Or, like, I usually just run in from the gym and I'm like a hot mess.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just like, gotta hey, learn not to pick your nose and
yeah.
things like that.
I don't
that.
Usually do that, but I do like will like play with my hair and so I appreciate that.
I do that too. I'm a fidgeter with my hands. You can't see my hands, but under the table, I'm twiddling my thumbs and stuff and flicking fingers and whatever. So before we ask you the question that we normally ask, do you have any other questions for us?
No, I think we're good. Okay. I feel like I put you in the hot seat.
You don't have any more, okay.
I mean, I could make up shit.
We'd be here all day. Dissecting our fucking brains.
Yeah, we'll leave here like, damn.
Like, yeah. I gotta fix this.
Yeah, a laundry list of problems. All right. So I don't know if you've watched any of our episodes or not, but
watched parts.
Okay. So at the end of every episode, we always ask people that we're interviewing what is something that they listen to that people would not expect them to listen to.
And you're the hardcore therapist, so.
So my daughter loves country music.
Oh, that's good.
Like,
oh,
man. Really loves country music a lot.
Old or new?
She likes or new both. Country
fucking
music.
Fucking eyes rolling as you say it and shit.
I mean, I've gotten her to listen to some old country music. I went to my first country concert a few weeks ago with her.
What was the concert?
It was Thomas Rhett.
I do know that name. Yeah.
Yeah.
How's that crowd?
Lots of beer drinking, lots of vaping, lots of beer drinking.
What if you went there and it was just like an all out, like hardcore mosh pit? You're like,
that
what
would
the
be
fuck?
Rad.
Like,
I'd
how
be
did
like,
this
yes,
happen?
Hey, well,
they're just all wearing cowboy hats.
People would probably not expect that. I like because she's hilarious. She like I'm her passenger princess. She always wants to drive, so I listen to a ton of country music now because she's constantly playing it. But like something that I love,
yeah.
And I actually do like some country music. Like now, like I'll sing it with her. Kind
of
hilarious.
Some of it's good. It's just a lot of the new stuff is like the same song regurgitated with a different melody behind it.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, she loves like Morgan Wallen and Zach Bryan, and like she loves like all those new. But there's a woman she listens to now. I can't remember her name, but she opened for Kenny Chesney. I think I wish I remembered her name. Megan, I think something. But she's pretty interesting songwriter. Like I really like her lyrics. But something that people probably don't know that I listen to that I love Marvin Gaye and Al Green so much, like so much. If I'm cooking, I would probably listen to that over anything. But I love like Marvin Gaye. I love Marvin Gaye.
So
I love Al Green too.
Al Green in like preachy Al Green or in like earlier Al Green or both?
Earlier. I mean, all of it, but early Al Green for sure.
What's
yeah.
your favorite Marvin Gaye record? Because we both love Marvin, so.
Oh, you do? Oh my God. See, this is where I start sweating and I don't know how to answer it.
Okay, I have three fucking copies of What's Going On.
So do I.
What's Going On is probably my favorite.
And it's not
probably
my favorite.
But it's probably my favorite.
Yeah.
But I'm just not. I'm not good at saying.
Yeah.
I just honestly put on Apple like, and just let Marvin Gaye do its thing.
I would say probably Midnight Love would be my favorite.
Oh, that is such a good album.
Yeah.
See, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't be able to just be like that, pop off like that. But yeah, that would be it. Those would be, and I don't know if people would not
His
realize.
His live album
but.
Is one of the. I just love live albums, but...
Yeah, his live album. Well, he's got a couple of live records that are really
good. What is it,
really
the Pandemonium one or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
That's that one's fucking tits.
The Trouble Man soundtrack's really good.
Yeah.
I also really love Bob Seger.
Like, shit, you gotta love all of the fucking Michigan homies.
Yeah,
Bob Seger's kind of surprising, though, like, because of, like... you would have came up at a time when it was like, fuck Bob Seger, man, I'm listening to fucking Youth of Today or whatever, you know what I mean, right?
I love him, and he used to, my parents, when they lived in Michigan, still they belonged, see, this is where I'm like, my fully like letting it all out. My parents belonged to a country club, and Bob Seger also belonged to the same country club. He was just like a nice man. So yeah, I like him.
Yeah, he's like an icon around here because apparently he has been here a handful of times and people have been talking about it for 40 years.
Yeah, like his aunt had a bank account somewhere. Like, for real, dude. I mean, it's like, but yeah, that's been
I think he lives on Orchard Lake. I don't know if he still does, but I think he used to live on Orchard Lake, which is like in my, like where I grew up.
Side note on Bob Seger. Have you guys ever noticed how he had never had like any merch? Like even back in the day, like how hard it is to find
Bob Seger shirts though.
Lately,
so am I. Like lately. baseball shirts. I feel like baseball shirts were his
and
repops. Like
but early on, I guess I've never paid attention.
Yeah, it's weird. And he was like one of the last ones to have his shit all repopped on vinyl. Like
probably because they made. Like,
we should get him
fucking
on.
Millions of them.
You could probably get him on.
I know we should try to get Bob Seger on. That'd be just shit.
That'd be cool, but I'm not really a Bob Seger fan. Oh, we could have Bob and Ted at the same time.
No, I like Bob. I like Bob Seger. His writing's fucking... I guess it's just relatable.
Yeah. So those would be the things, but I think... I really think people would not expect me to listen to country because I was, like, super anti-country music for a really long time, but... Layla and I will like jam out in the car.
I mean, when you have a kid though, it changes stuff. Like when we were talking to Chevy Fresh, like he was like, fuck yeah, I listened to Taylor Swift and like started singing it. And I'm like, shit, if I had a daughter, I'd probably be listening to it too. Like
it's Taylor Swift country we listen to.
But not the pop side of things.
Not pop side. So yeah.
And you go to like the second or third album and you're all done.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Thankfully, my kid gets his music choice or taste from me, it seems. So, like, he's into, like, a good mix of things between, like, hip-hop and punk stuff and whatever. I mean, he's not really into, like, jazz or funk or soul or anything like that yet. We'll see if he gets there. Maybe he won't. But I usually, like, when we get in the car, I hand him my phone, and I'm just like, I run with it, put whatever on. And lately, he's been on, like, a lot of hip-hop stuff, but...
My boys don't. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I was just gonna say for 14, like he's got a good variety of music.
My kids all listen to very different music, like all three of them. Like Jacob, my oldest, who's 23, he loves electronic music, like hilarious. Loves electronic music, like he'll go to like Movement and shit, and he like went to Chicago for some electronic music festival and.
He's going to those, like, big EDM fests.
Yeah, like, he's into it. It's so weird. It's crazy. And then Jonah, like, I think he likes, like, hip-hop, and then Layla likes country. So, yeah, they're all different.
It's kind of how people in the same households can grow up with completely different music tastes. Because, like, me and my sister listen to absolutely nothing the same. But we grew up in the same house and we're not even like, if you put me side by side with her, you wouldn't even know it's my sister. Like we're nothing alike, but we get along great, but there's just musically, there's no similarities whatsoever.
See, I could always find common ground, like Tom Petty maybe, but see, that's some shit that you might not like either. So,
you know, I can't stand Tom
you
Petty.
You know, right. So, but I mean, I'm just trying to say like there was Van Halen was a big one. We could always like, throw on some Van Halen, but yeah, they none of my brothers just listen to anything cool, really. Tupac.
My brother totally listened to like Motown, like but girly Motown,
shit,
like the
there's
Supremes.
Nothing wrong with that.
I love girly Motown. Whoa. What?
No, see? You know, I can't. Like if I hear Diana Ross, I have to like turn it off.
Oh, see, I love
like for real.
I love Supremes and Martha Reeves and all that stuff.
No,
Mary Wells. Yeah. Mary Wells, man, she's fucking awesome.
No, I'm all like, give me something else. Not that. The only thing, like, when my brother in the 80s, he's 3 years older than me, like, when he was, like, listening to, like, more, like, club music and, like, right? So, like, New Order and Joy Division and that kind of stuff. Like we all kind of like that, but he would never listen to that now. He just will listen to Supremes on repeat.
Oh shit.
That's,
and I'm all like, yeah.
I couldn't do it on repeat all day, but definitely it's in my collection and I listen to it from time to time.
I have a picture of Diana. That's why I'm like, it's just like
this. You're looking at it?
No, it's not in here yet. It's not in here yet, but I think I'm going to
put
it.
Where can I put Diana? Yeah,
just for you. I'm going to fucking hang up Diana.
We have Curtis Mayfield over there. He's not Motown.
Oh, that's rad.
Yeah, Superfly.
Yeah.
Recently put up a Shelter poster.
My dad was in that I love. I had some Shelter stuff, and I don't have anything on my walls right now, but I will at some point. I have a bunch of stuff. Actually, I have all these photos of me. I think Danielle Dabrowski actually took them, now that I'm looking at them, of like crowd shots of like,
oh, that's awesome.
Gorilla Biscuits, I'm X'd Up, Shelter, like
fuck
kind of stuff.
Dog.
Like that. I'm gonna put those up soon.
Please do. Those are awesome.
Thanks.
I love finding that shit.
I know, it is awesome. Anything else you want to ask me before?
No, I don't think so. I think we kind of summed everything up. As far, I'm sure when we sign off, I'll be like, God damn it, I wanted to ask this. That happens all the time. But
thanks for taking the time to jump on and
of course.
Bullshit with us.
Yeah, if you ever have questions, mental health questions, just get a hold of me and I will answer them on my podcast.
Cool.
Or if something comes up with any of your guests.
Okay.
That you need any answers, I'm more than happy to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, so
we thank you for jumping on the show, telling us your story and taking the time to do so. It's been awesome getting to know you.
Same. Thank you so much.
We'll be in touch with you online when we get closer to releasing this. And
okay.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye. <All right. laughs>
Thanks.
Thanks again. Have a good day.
I'll see you guys later.
Later.
All right, bye.
Bye.